Hello, welcome to our IP podcast series. My name is Charlotte Dooley and I am Head of Brand Protection here at Charles Russell Speechies, and I'm joined by my colleague Peter Bird, who's an associate in our IP group.
Hi Charlotte. Yes, today we are going to be discussing the hotly anticipated judgment in the Sky versus Sky case. This was potentially going to be a judgment that had very wide ramifications for trademark filing and trademark enforcement across the EU. I'm not so sure that it does now that we've read the judgment. But just to give you a little bit of background, this was a case brought by Sky PLC, the media company, against Skykick, which was a software company. And Sky were pursuing Skykick for infringement of their trademarks. Skykick counterclaimed, claiming that the Sky trademarks are invalid for two key reasons. One being that they were registered for computer software and that was too broad, that it wasn't clear and precise. And the other that it was that they were registered for various things such as whips and bleaching preparations, and Sky clearly had no intention to use for those things, so they were filed in bad faith. The judgment was handed down and it probably did go the way that practitioners were expecting, but we think that there may have been a bit of a missed opportunity by the CJEU to provide some clarity, particularly in the area of broad specifications.
Yes, the Advocate General's opinion, which issued in October, provided a lot of commentary on broad terms such as computer software. And whilst that opinion did suggest a possible law change, which hasn't happened, and I think that's good news because it means that existing registrations aren't suddenly going to be invalid for covering broad terms, it does seem a bit of a wasted opportunity that there wasn't any expansion on whether computer software is by itself sufficiently precise.
Or any, indeed, clarity either way as to whether it is, whether it isn't, whether it should be, if there are things we should be thinking about, which I think practitioners were expecting in this.
Yes, they were, and the CJEU did not touch on that at all. So what the decision did find, though, was that essentially the law is unchanged.
Yeah.
And the position largely remains the same as it did before the decision issued. So in some respects, all the anticipation led to something of a letdown. But essentially, it's good news for existing registration holders because they don't have to do anything to prevent their registrations being found invalid based on this decision.
Yeah. So should we turn to the questions that were referred? This was a referral from, as I said, the Skykick case in the High Court in England. The judge in that case decided that the law wasn't entirely clear on these points, so referred some questions for the CJEU. The first and the second questions were essentially whether a trademark can be declared invalid on the basis that some of its terms are lacking sufficient clarity and precision. And the second question, which feeds into that, is whether computer software lacks sufficient clarity and precision. And the answer to this is quite clearly no, there is no new ground for invalidity of a trademark. And that's, as Charlotte said, good news for trademark owners. I think as what we were expecting here was a little bit more discussion on the second question regarding computer software and actually how this might stretch to other terms that may be considered quite broad. I know there's various cases in the UK such as insurance services. I think it would stretch to financial services, telecommunication services. And whether they would fall into this category of too broad or not too broad, and that's where we've got absolutely nothing from this.
No. So the only guidance provided was, well, not guidance, such more a reminder that if you want to challenge a broad specification, the time to do that is 5 years post-registration through non-use revocation proceedings, and at that time it will be assessed whether the specification is too broad based on the use that's been made of the trademark.
Yeah. And so before we move on to discuss what this actually means and what people will have to do, we'll just briefly touch on the other questions referred, or two of the other questions referred, and that was whether filing a trademark for in respect of goods and services where there was clearly no intention to use means that that trademark was filed in bad faith. And this was on the back of Sky's very, very broad specifications for things that I think on the stand they weren't able to justify their applications for. And again, here I don't think the law has changed at all. It could be bad faith, but it's not bad faith in and of itself. Bad faith, you need to look at all of the surrounding circumstances and whether the filing was an abusive filing for a host of reasons, such as, you know, trying to stop third parties getting into the market or things like that. So in and of itself, filing for something that you don't necessarily have a genuine intent to use is not bad faith.
That's right. And where we think this will impact trademark applicants and proprietors going forward, though, is that at their application stage, their specification might receive greater scrutiny. And whilst the registry probably won't raise the issue of bad faith at that stage, it will be more a point of confirming whether the terms covered are justified. It might be that registries start looking at broad terms and question whether they are precise enough at that application stage. And again, this wouldn't be on the basis of bad faith at all, but just looking at what's justified for that clear and precise requirement in order to gain that trademark registration. And at the registration stage, when you've got your registration, as we said, the decision doesn't render it invalid even if you do have a broad term covered. It's not bad faith to have a broad term. But you might find that if you are challenged on the grounds of non-use, or if you seek to rely on a registration that could have a counterclaim for non-use against it, that those broad terms are going to receive ever more scrutiny, and bad faith won't automatically be found, but it could be a possibility if there are those other factors present which suggest you covered either terms you had no interest in, and see with Sky, whips always comes up.
Whips.
And yes. If, you know, even a simple term like computer software, which has received a lot of attention in this case, whether that is of itself too broad because it encompasses a huge range of functions. And one function, perhaps what Sky used software for, might be very different to what another party would use that software for, with the two terms not actually being in conflict.
Yeah. And of course, you know, as practitioners, I think this has been on our radar for a very long time. The practice in other jurisdictions, such as the States, you'd never get away with computer software as a specification item. And I think we were slightly shocked and probably see this as a bit of a missed opportunity, because this was finally time for some guidance on whether EU practice across the EU, including in the UK, was going to go a bit more in that direction. And I think most of us probably think that it should in some way, because computer software is very broad. And as Charlotte's just explained, you know, there's a huge number of things that you could provide under the heading of computer software. And the registers are getting quite cluttered with marks that perhaps aren't used.
Yes, and I think that whilst the UK triggered this referral, and they might be the ones who in particular at the examination stage look at terms like computer software and financial services with ever greater scrutiny, it will be interesting to see how the UK registry and other registries throughout Europe, and of course the EUIPO, apply this decision when they receive new applications in the future, and whether it is very much business as usual for all or most of them, or if, as we suspect, there's going to be ever greater scrutiny at that application stage.
And of course, actually, the thing really to watch for now is this was a referral, but it's going to come back to the English High Court, and it'd be interesting to see how the judge in that instance deals with it, and whether anything is changed from that.
Yes, I think that would make an interesting follow-up in our podcast series when that decision issues. But that's actually brings us on to an interesting point, Brexit.
Yes, so you might be thinking, why do we care about this? The UK is leaving the EU, indeed tomorrow or at the end of December, depending on how you see it. Well, we do care because at the moment, we are in the EU, and at the end of December, EU law will be transposed into UK law. So this will form part of our binding law going forward. The other key reason why we care is because this was, as I've said, a referral from the English High Court. This will now come back to the High Court and the judge will make a ruling, and that will be the state of play in England going forward. So regardless of Brexit, this CJEU opinion judgment is very important.
Absolutely. And I think that as this was a UK referral, whatever happens with Brexit and our law going forward anyway, clearly the England and courts have concerns about specification breadth, and that suggests a trend that's ongoing. And that would bring me on to a few take-home points from this decision, what we should practically be doing next. And I think when filing applications, rather than just reusing old specifications, it would be good practice anyway, but particularly in light of this current trend, to review the terms covered to make sure that they reflect current and future needs, to make sure the specification gives you the protection you need, but also with a view to whether any terms are precise enough.
Yeah.
And it might be that you still cover those precise terms, but be mindful that there might be scrutiny when you file them from the registries. And even if those broad terms get through at the 5-year period when your registration becomes vulnerable, if someone attacks it for non-use, you might find that your broad terms need to be justified in some way, or that your use won't support them and you'll end up with a much narrower category anyway.
And you may lose them. And of course, it's always been good practice. It's always been what we would advise to have as broad and narrow a specification as you can. So if someone was wanting to protect computer software for food delivery, you would start with computer software and then you'd narrow it down to a subcategory, and then you'd narrow it down to a subcategory, and you'd keep narrowing it as much as possible until you've got exactly what you want to cover. In this way, you can apply what we call the blue pencil test if your marks are challenged, whether they're challenged in the future because another ruling might say that broad terms are not precise enough, or whether they're challenged on the basis of non-use after 5 years. You can just cross out the marks that you, the items that you haven't necessarily been able to prove are valid, and you've still got your more specific parts of the specification protected. And as I say, that's something that practitioners have been doing for a long time, and I think that's ever more necessary now in light of this judgment.
Yes, I would agree with that. So I think that's the real take-home point, is to review your specifications when filing new applications and at any point when you challenge third-party rights, because you could narrow then if you felt that that might see off an attack on the grounds of non-use and lead to difficult questions, I suppose, about why you filed so broadly, and that a regular review of your rights is always a good idea anyway, to make sure that they adequately meet your business needs. And the old practice of making sure that even if you have your broad term, you also have the specific item you do, because specifications are really given their literal meaning these days, and even if you think it falls within a broad term, you want to be absolutely sure by having that narrow term covered as well, because you wouldn't want to find out that at some point down the road, whatever you thought fell under a broad category actually doesn't for some reason, which could be possible with certain terms.
Yeah, and of course, one thing that this judgment does protect actually is broad filing strategies, which may still be commercially justified and commercially sensible. If you know that you're going to offer financial services and you've got plans to expand into all kinds of financial services, it's probably justified to file a mark for just financial services or financial services and then narrow down to all of the subcategories of it. And what we have here is a judgment that means that we can still do that, which I guess is good news for brand strategy and for people who are planning their brands going forward, because the judgment could have gone the other way and then you couldn't have had financial services and you'd have to, at the point of filing, decide all of the things that you want to protect. So that's, I guess, a good takeaway from this.
I agree. It's generally good news for rights owners.
And then also to touch briefly on the bad faith point, as we said, one of the questions was whether filing for goods that you have clearly no intention to use, whether that was bad faith or not. And I think, again, I think Charlotte will probably agree with me that it's a good decision that it's not in and of itself bad faith. But it does also bring around a few practical things that you can do when filing marks, just to get around this. And one of them is to make sure that you've got a note of your business plans. You know, if Sky had had an email to their advisor or a plan somewhere saying, we may one day plan to sell Sky branded whips, I imagine that question wouldn't have arisen. I mean, I imagine they didn't have that plan, so that's why that wasn't on their evidence. But you know, making sure that we've got clear records of what you're intending to do does protect you in the future from any attacks on the basis that you may not have had intent to use. And although this doesn't in and of itself constitute bad faith, if it's part of a greater claim for bad faith, it can't hurt to have those records kept securely.
I agree. It's worth having, as you said, even just a brief email to your legal advisor stating what you want to cover and why, just to help see off any attempts to challenge your rights on that basis. If you've got that email showing that however many years prior to the dispute at hand you'd expressed an interest in using, then that should help neutralise any attack on those grounds.
Yeah.
Because there was some intention to use, and therefore there ought not to be a finding of bad faith.
Yeah.
Well, I think it'll be interesting to see how the English court applies this decision, and we obviously hotly anticipate their judgment on that. But for now, I think that's everything we can say on Sky Kick.
I think so, yes. I mean, just don't panic and carry on as you were.
Yes, nothing's changed, essentially. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.